70 years with KBS World Radio, 70 years of Global Korea. Throughout the year, we celebrate the 70th anniversary of KBS World Radio with the voices of our listeners from all over the world.
Hello, my name is Zhao Yadong. I'm an IT project manager in China and a listener of KBS World Radio for 30 years. China established its diplomatic ties with Korea on August 24, 1992. Back then, Korea was still an unfamiliar, mysterious country for most Chinese people. I came across KBS World Radio's Chinese broadcast in 1993, when I was a middle school student, and I have frequently been tuning in ever since. I got to learn about things like the miracle on the Han River and the concept of Shinto Buli, which means locally grown food is the best for you. The station helped me understand Korea more. KBS World Radio is the most prestigious international broadcaster in Korea and provides a great window to Korea. It is bringing Korea closer to the rest of the world as a link between international listeners and the country. Thanks to KBS World Radio, my views on Korea have changed over the years. Korea is not just an economic powerhouse, but also a home to movies, music, food, and many other products that boast global popularity. I hope KBS World Radio will continue to contribute to friendship between Korea and China, and moreover, Korea and the world. Happy 70th birthday.
KBS World Radio, 70 years of global Korea. KBS World Radio brings Korea to you wherever you are.
Hello, it is Thursday, the 21st of September, and welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Kwon Jang-woo. The National Assembly has voted to approve a motion allowing prosecutors to arrest the Democratic Party chief Lee Jae-myung for a pre-trial detention warrant hearing. We'll have more details in news briefing shortly. At the UN General Assembly, President Yoon Suk-yeol denounced Russia for its invasion of Ukraine and its burgeoning military cooperation with North Korea. We'll discuss the implications for our in-depth today. And coming up for Explore Korea, we'll be discovering some traditional markets to enjoy in Seoul, including what to see, eat and buy. Let's begin Korea 24. That was National Assembly Speaker Kim Jin-pyo announcing the results of a parliamentary vote and the passage of a motion allowing the arrest of opposition Democratic Party leader Lee Jae-myung. It is the first such approval in the nation's history. Our KBS World Radio news editor Gu Hee-jin joins us in the studio now to break down the votes as well as our other headlines of the day. Hee-jin, hello.
Hello, Jang-woo.
So this was a shocking result when considering that the Democratic Party hold a majority in the National Assembly, meaning a significant number of DP lawmakers broke away to vote to approve the motion for his arrest. And it also comes as the DP chair himself was absent in the vote as he is in hospital due to his prolonged hunger strike. So first, can you break down the results and give us all the details?
Well, the motion to allow a warrant hearing for Lee's pre-trial detention passed with 149 votes in favour and 136 against and 6 abstentions with 4 invalid ballots. The opposition leader has been under investigation on suspicion of corruption related to land development scandals and third-party bribery. The prosecution's probe concerns accusations from Yi's time as mayor of Songnam, alleging that he granted various privileges to private developers and causing losses to the city government by changing zoning regulations for the former site of the Korean Food Research Institute in Paekyeongdong between 2014 and 2015.
Yes, although Yi was absent from the proceedings, as we mentioned, Yi did write a controversial post on his Facebook page the previous day, calling the motion illegal and unjust, as he warned that its passage will give way to the prosecution's political investigation.
Indeed. And DP representative Park Ju-min gave a speech in Yi's defense prior to the vote. Justice Minister Han Dong-hoon, on the other hand, delivered a speech in support of the arrest bill. The state agency is also looking into suspicions of involvement in the remittance of some $8 million to North Korea by the chair of Sangbangul Group between January 2019 and January 2020, when Yi was Gyeonggi Province governor, that was purportedly transferred to facilitate his prospective trip to the regime. Meanwhile, the National Assembly also passed a motion recommending Prime Minister Han Duck-soo's dismissal on claims of incompetence in his role as the chief of the cabinet, a first such passage in constitutional history.
Okay, now to better understand where this all leaves the DP chief and what legal steps he is now facing, we're going to break away from our news briefing and speak to a legal expert now. We have joining us on the line Professor Park Yong-chul from the Seogang University Law School. He is a renowned expert of South Korean criminal law. Professor Park, hello and thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
So yes, this was quite a shocking result. Many political analysts had expected that the National Assembly would vote the other way. But now that a majority of lawmakers voted to lift the arrest immunity for Yi, what does this mean exactly? Can you explain for our listeners the pretrial detention hearing that Yi Jae-myung is facing?
Well, the detention hearing is about a court decision whether Yi Jae-myung has to be detained before and after the court day begins. Currently, he is not prosecuted yet, so the prosecutor will have 20 more days to make a decision to prosecute or not to prosecute, and he is expected to be prosecuted. So once he is prosecuted, he will be, in case he is detained, he will be detained for up to 6 months for the trial.
Okay, so the Assembly voted to temporarily allow the prosecution to apprehend Yi for a hearing. But then if the court does decide to grant the request for Yi's pretrial detention, does the parliament have any say on that? Will there be any sort of other vote or request?
Well, I guess at this point, the battle is actually only between Yi Jae-myung and the prosecution office. There shouldn't be any more requests to the assembly. So if he is detained because the court decided to do that, Yi Jae-myung will have the second opportunity to motion for release to the court. But I guess I'm not pretty sure that whether he will be whether there will be the warrant that will be issued by the court.
Mm. Previously, when lawmakers were sent to a warrant hearing for pretrial detention, such hearings usually took place within several days after the parliamentary vote. But when do you think Yi's warrant hearing will be held, especially considering his prolonged hunger strike and his current health condition? He's been on a hunger strike for 22 days now and is currently in hospital.
And there's other factors as well, because we are now nearing around the very long holiday season, Chuseok holiday. So I think there can be three scenarios. The first one is, like I said, given the long Chuseok holidays beginning 28th, I think the hearing could be before 28th, which will be 27th. Or the second scenario will be the hearing may happen during the holiday season. It's rare, but it can happen. Or the third scenario will be, it could be after the holiday season, given that Yi Jae-myung's poor health condition. At this point, it's very hard to say, but I bet it will be probably before the Chuseok holiday, which will be 27th.
Okay, and so when that hearing does take place, what do you think will happen? Do you think the court will ultimately end up granting the pretrial detention warrant for the DP chief?
I guess at this point, I'm not sure about the answer, but it's more than likely the warrant will be issued because there are numerous charges against him. And also the fact that he was actually sending the letters to his colleagues about not granting this hearing permission, it actually means that he might be afraid of the chance of this warrant will be issued. So I think chance is more than likely.
Okay, so we will have to watch the situation closely. Professor Pak, thank you for your time and walking us through that situation as well.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we'll leave that story there for today and move on to our other headlines now. Heejin, thank you for standing by. Let's go to New York now, where President Yoon Suk-yeol addressed the United Nations. And in his speech, he denounced Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the possibility of military cooperation between North Korea and Russia. Can you tell us more?
Well, in his keynote speech at the 78th General Assembly in New York on Wednesday, President Yoon issued a strong warning against looming military cooperation between Russia and North Korea, saying their arms deal amid the war in Ukraine would be constitute a direct provocation against South Korea as well. Now, let's listen to his remarks.
또 북한이 러시아에 재래식 무기를 지원하는 대가로
And if the DPRK acquires the information and technology necessary to enhance its WMD capabilities in exchange for supporting Russia with conventional weapons, the deal will be a direct provocation threatening the peace and security of not only Ukraine, but also the Republic of Korea. The Republic of Korea, together with its allies and partners, will not stand idly by.
Now, talks between North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and Russian President Vladimir Putin in Russia's Far East last week have sparked concerns about an exchange of conventional North Korean weapons for high-tech Russian arms technology. While introducing his plans to help war-ravaged Ukraine, Yoon specifically targeted Moscow for abandoning its responsibilities as a permanent member of the UN Security Council. Amid a protracted stalemate within the UNSC, Yoon noted the need to reform the top UN body. Now, during his 15-minute speech, however, Yoon did not criticize China for opposing additional sanctions against North Korea at the UNSC as Seoul is pursuing efforts to hold a three-way summit with Japan and China.
And finally, the finance minister, Choo Kyung-ho, says the government will remain highly alert and take appropriate measures amid the persistent risk of fluctuations in the global financial market, with interest rates likely to stay high for a long period of time. Can you tell us more?
Well, Choo was speaking during an emergency meeting on macroeconomics in Seoul after the U.S. Federal Reserve announced its decision to keep the target range for its benchmark rate at 5 to 5.25% to 5.5%. He noted Fed Chairman Jerome Powell mentioned that the U.S. will determine the extent of additional policy after taking into consideration economic and financial conditions.
That's all for our news briefing today. Heejin, thank you for those updates.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock and Forex Update.
The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index fell 44.77 points, or 1.75% on Thursday, to close at 2,514.97. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ also fell, shedding 22.04 points, or 2.5%, to close at 860.68. On the foreign exchange, the local currency weakened, 9.61 against the U.S. dollar, closing the day at 1,339.71.
You can check Korean stock and forex closings at world.kbs.co.kr.
It's time now for Korea Trending, our daily segment where we take a look at some other news stories that have been trending online. And for that, we have with us news editor Daniel Che. Daniel, hello. It's good to see you.
Good to see you there, Jang-woo.
Okay, let's dive right into the first story. What do you have for us?
Well, the Korean women's volleyball national team that had a fantastic run in the 2020 Tokyo Olympics failed to even qualify for the upcoming global games.
Yes, the women's volleyball team, they made it all the way to the semifinals at the Tokyo Olympics just 2 years ago now. They were hailed as heroic underdogs at the time, but in just 2 years, it seems that has all come crashing down. So tell us what happened.
Well, on Wednesday at the Paris Olympics qualifiers, Group C bracket's fourth match pitted South Korea against the U.S. Korea failed and fell 3-1, and head coach Cesar Hernandez's squad lost 4 straight games already after taking on Italy 3-0 there, Poland 3-1, Germany 3-2, making Korea fifth among 8 teams in Group C. 12 teams get to compete in the Paris Games, the top 2 in each 3 groups, plus the host country, and the top 5 in the World Volleyball Body FIVB rankings. Korea, unfortunately, ranks 36th. Even if Korea wins the next 3 games by a large margin, it's not going to be nearly enough to catch up to group leader Italy and runner-up the U.S.
Yes, as you said, it's only been 2 years now that we saw Korea soar with one of the biggest international stars, Kim Young-kyung, leading the way, anchoring and carrying the team on her shoulders to new heights.
Yes, this would have been Korea's 4th straight Olympic berth. In the 2012 London Games, the ladies made it to the Final Four, and Kim Young-kyung was voted MVP of the overall Olympic Games there. Even in the 2020 Tokyo Games, we clinched semifinals tickets. But with Kim and a number of season stars that played the backbones of the national team gone, this has been a rough transition phase for Team Korea. Former captain Kim is contributing as an advisor, but she can only bring a horse to water. Coach Hernandez focused on improving attack and efficiency, but so far, the results show something else must be done to retool the team. Expectations are at an all-time low for the Hangzhou Asian Games now that we've seen how Korea continues to struggle for women's volleyball.
Yes, it is very unfortunate. There's going to be a lot of soul-searching, of course, but hopefully the team can build back up slowly, although it does seem that there's a long road ahead indeed.
Well, once you go down, the only way to go is up, right? The optimistic way of looking at it would be.
Indeed. Okay, let's move on to our second story. What do you have for us?
Well, according to reports on Thursday, Korea's dakgalbi was rated runner-up in the global stir-fry dish ranking list carried out by international food guide Taste Atlas that was recently released. Dakgalbi, a spicy stir-fried chicken dish cooked in a cast-iron skillet, usually along with cabbage, sticky rice cake or dog, carrots, sweet potatoes, other vegetables and seasoning. It's one of the, I guess you could call it a crossover between a casual street dish and a restaurant dish.
Yes, I'll have to add some cheese in there as well. That's how I like it. But yes, this list sounds interesting. A global stir-fry dish ranking. I understand that this was taken very seriously as well, and that competition was fierce, but dakgalbi checked all the boxes, it seems, then.
Right. Croatian journalist Matija Babic spent 3 years cataloging over 10,000 foods and drinks into an encyclopedia, and in 2018, from that encyclopedia, this competition emerged. The scores are based on the ratings from food enthusiast readers. There's a series of mechanisms to recognize real users and ignore bot nationalist or local patriotic rankings. There's additional value granted to the ratings of users that the system recognizes as extra knowledgeable about cuisine. For the 10 best rated stir-fry dishes in the world, 3,057 ratings were recorded and 2,398 recognized by the system as legitimate. The guide emphasized this ranking is not the end-all, be-all global conclusion about food, but it's about promoting excellent local foods and instilling pride in traditional dishes.
Well, it all sounds very thorough. So tell us, what did they say was the appeal of dakgalbi? And also, what dish did it lose out to in the end?
Well, its appeal is the spicy, flavorsome taste and how it developed from a frugal dish in the 60s to a classic Korean dish now. A unique to Korean cuisine, at the end of the meal with some food left in the skillet, rice is added to create spicy stir-fried rice or bukkeumbap, and some people see this as the highlight. Dakgalbi got 4.7 points, trailing behind Thailand's Phat Kafaro, which got 4.8. Respondents who gave positive reviews for dakgalbi stood at 84%. Only 16% said they are not aware or are uninterested in the dish.
Well, it's great to hear that a Korean dish did so well on this list. Even though it missed out on the top spot, it's still very impressive and a badge of honor for Korean cuisine, I would say. Okay, let's move on to our last story. What else has been trending?
Well, this is really, really great news for the BTS ARMY. All seven members have renewed their contract with agency HYBE. It was confirmed in the press release by the company on Wednesday, so BTS will be back together as one soon.
Yes, I'm sure many fans will be thinking it's about time. We can be assured now that the boys will stick together and continue to make history with the agency that they started out with.
Yes, since their debut 10 years ago, the group renewed their contracts with HYBE in 2018. And that 2018 contract was due to expire next year. So it's a relief for fans to receive this news. Each member, RM, Jin, Suga, J-Hope, Jimin, V, and Jungkook, will sign exclusive agreements with the company. This follows a board resolution with Big Hit Music. It hasn't been revealed how long the duration of the new contracts are, but Big Hit has confirmed they will continue to work on future releases after 2025. BTS is currently on hiatus as two members are serving their 18-month mandatory military service, a requirement for any able-bodied South Korean man.
Yes, the hiatus, military service, all sensitive issues and factors that could serve as huge stumbling blocks in a K-pop star's career. But it seems like the agency and the man who helped form BTS have made the right decisions along the way.
Yes, some male K-pop stars have faced challenges in resuming their careers after completing national service because this is an intensely competitive industry where artists can be easily replaced, just like they say in one day you're in, next year you're out, right? Mm. In March, Bang Si-hyuk, chairman of HYBE and the mastermind behind BTS, said making the boys do military service was slowing the global growth of K-pop, and he was quite critical of the system, hoping that there could be other ways to ensure they can continue their careers. But at the same time, he did not oppose, he did not try to find a way to elude the system or draft dodge, like certain unfortunate cases we witnessed in the past. So the boys are going through it, and he is sticking with them.
Yes.
But while highlighting the effects of mandatory military service on male K-pop stars, he chose to ensure BTS members would face the obligation to their country head-on. And in the meantime, HYBE and Big Hit will do all they can to provide necessary support to BTS.
And that's all the time we have for today's Korea Trending. Thank you for those stories, Daniel, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you so much for having me.
President Yoon Suk-yeol had some strong words for Russia during his speech at the UN General Assembly on Wednesday. In reference to Russia's war in Ukraine, he said it was paradoxical that a permanent member of the UN Security Council would invade another sovereign nation. He also said that military cooperation between Russia and North Korea would constitute a direct provocation against South Korea as well as Ukraine. This comes on the back of a recent summit between Russian leader Vladimir Putin and the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. For further analysis of President Yoon's remarks and what it tells us about the current geopolitical tensions surrounding the Korean Peninsula, we have two guests joining us on the line today. First, we have Brian Myers, Professor of International Studies at Dongseo University. Professor, hello and welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And standing by on the line, we have Dr. Bruce Bennett, who's an adjunct international and defense researcher at the RAND Corporation in the U.S. Dr. Bennett, hello. It's great to have you with us as well.
My pleasure.
Professor Myers, let me start with your overall thoughts on President Yoon's UN General Assembly speech. What key messages stood out to you?
Well, it was quite a long speech, and various things were covered, including praise for the city of Busan, which we who live here were, of course, happy to hear. But I think the main point, there's no question, was President Yoon's formal expression of opposition to Russia's plan to cooperate militarily with North Korea. Because this wasn't worded in a diplomatic and roundabout way, but was expressed, I thought, remarkably bluntly. And at one point, the president even seemed to question the legitimacy of Russia remaining on the UN Security Council. He seemed to be advocating for its removal. Now, you don't have to be an ally of the United States to criticize Russia's invasion of Ukraine, but I thought he went out of his way to identify South Korea as a firm ally of the American camp, talking about free world solidarity and so on. I think this took a lot of people by surprise, not least the South Korean public, which is perhaps a bit uneasy about this. You know, he even seemed to frame Busan's expo bid in this old framework of free world solidarity, and I think that might have been a little bit unwise.
Right, so he was very critical of Russia indeed. How do you think Russia will view this? How do you think they will respond?
Well, you know, relations between Moscow and Seoul were already at a pretty low point. You know, it was only about a week ago that a Russian foreign ministry official warned that the South Koreans were risking the 30-year relationship of the two countries and said that South Korean companies are already losing market share in Russia as a result of the Yoon government sanctions. So the message was, you South Koreans are really hurting yourself with this stuff. Now, I'm not sure how Russia will respond to this speech. I think it's conceivable that visa regulations could be tightened. But in a way, we can say that Russia's decision to cooperate with North Korea is sort of already retaliation enough in advance. What seems certain, I'm afraid, is that President Yoon's speech may do more to encourage and intensify cooperation between Moscow and Pyongyang than to discourage it.
Right. And Dr. Bennett, what were your takeaways from the speech, particularly his denouncements of Russia? And what do you think Russia will have made of the remarks?
Well, I think Russia would be very unhappy. I mean, the President Yoon basically called Russia a rogue state. That it's a state that's not only pursuing an inappropriate war in Ukraine, but that it's also taking an approach with North Korea that violates sanctions, that threatens peace in Northeast Asia. And Russia appears to be doing that largely in retaliation for what the West has done helping Ukraine. He's essentially striking back and proposing to provide advanced technology to North Korea, technology that would allow North Korea to potentially create a very serious threat to Northeast Asia. And so he is calling the situation very clearly. Of the kind of threat that Russia's creating, that's not going to be well received in Russia, and even China may be a little skeptical of this, and certainly North Korea is going to be unhappy.
Yes, and Dr. Bennett, this is the latest development in the Yoon government's moves to take a very hawkish stance when it comes to foreign policies regarding North Korea and Russia, while moving closer towards the US and Japan. What have you made of this overall approach? Are there not risks involved?
Well, there are certainly risks, economic risks, but I think we have to remember that the biggest risk is that North Korea suddenly winds up with a wide variety of advanced technologies that Russia can provide. Russia went out of their way to provide a wide range of technology views to North Korea, may well decide to provide many of those technologies. And if they do, that is truly threatening to Northeast Asia. And therefore, something that that President Yoon has got to be very concerned about, that the Korean people need to be concerned about. This is not a happy situation. And it's a case where Russia's acting essentially in a way that's the antithesis of the purpose of the UN, to try to secure peace in the world.
Professor Myers, what have you made of the Yoon administration's move to try and move closer towards the US and Japan while taking a stronger stance against Russia and North Korea? Do you think it's sustainable?
Well, that's the thing. It's I think, domestically not particularly popular. You know, President Yoon has had a good day on the domestic political scene. But, you know, we have parliamentary elections next year, and it remains to be seen how the South Korean public is going to judge his approach. My personal judgment is that he expressed himself in the UN more strongly and bluntly than he needed to. You know, of course, neutrality in regard to Ukraine is out of the question. But South Koreans generally, they like the alliance with America. They prize it, but they don't want to do any more for it than is absolutely necessary. And I don't say that in a moralizing way. It might be rational. They don't want their country sticking its neck out more than necessary. And I think they feel especially uneasy when their government appears to be picking fights with powerful trade partners, especially when it's done on behalf of a faraway country that most Koreans are not personally invested in.
Well, another question that we've already hinted at as well is China. Now, during his 15-minute speech, Yoon did not mention China at all. There was no criticism of China's opposition to additional sanctions against the North at the UNSC. There was no mention of Taiwan. This comes at a time when South Korea is pursuing efforts to hold a three-way summit with Japan and China as well. With that in mind, Dr. Bennett, how do you think China viewed the recent North Korea-Russia summit first and their tightening relations?
Well, I think China probably is worried that North Korea is back to the pattern of its behavior in the 70s and 80s, where North Korea played Russia, or at that stage the Soviet Union, against China. North Korea likely is posturing itself to repeat that. And China's not going to be particularly anxious to have that happen. China's been anxious to avoid excessive pressure on North Korea. It knows that in reality, many in North Korea don't particularly like China. I mean, it's well said in North Korea by many in the elites that Japan is our enemy of 100 years and China is our enemy of 1,000 years. So the appearance of closeness in the relationship is often not exactly right. And China's probably looking at this and saying they're not too excited about North Korea winding up with all the capabilities Russia's threatening, because ultimately in China's bid to have regional and eventually global superiority, that could undermine China's regional capabilities.
So then what do you make of South Korea's efforts to hold this potential three-way summit with China and Japan? How do you think the Yoon government should approach China, considering the economic and regional aspects involved? But also, the Yoon government has somewhat distanced itself from China under this administration as well.
Well, the Yoon government has faced a number of challenges from China, but ultimately, South Korea's major trade partner is China. That makes for a very tricky situation, and China's wanted it that way. China's developed this trade relationship with South Korea as a means of potentially leveraging South Korea. It certainly demonstrated that with the THAAD deployment and the leverage it tried to apply to South Korea. I think China is anxious to maintain some strong degree of leverage with South Korea, and South Korea is not anxious to disrupt trade. And so it puts President Yoon in a difficult position. And I think, as Professor Myers has said, it puts the South Korean people in a difficult position where they'd like to have balance, but it's difficult given the threat that's developing.
Professor Myers, how do you think China viewed the recent North Korea-Russia summit, and how do you think they view that relationship with those two countries, as well as China's relationship with South Korea at this point, with all that in mind?
Well, I would agree with Dr. Bennett that North Korea has you know, played Moscow off against Beijing many times in its history, and China is probably wary of seeing it return to those old ways. On the other hand, I don't believe that China has any serious problem with what Kim Jong-un and Putin have been discussing. I don't believe that the Chinese are particularly worried about truly significant Russian technology transfer. I think they see this mainly in terms of you know, ammunition supply. And the Chinese believe strongly that a counterbalance to American hegemony is needed, especially when the U.S. seems to be establishing a de facto trilateral alliance with South Korea and Japan in China's front yard. So I think China approves to a certain extent of what the Russians and North Koreans are doing. And I wouldn't be surprised if Kim Jong-un has been keeping Xi Jinping informed all along.
Let's turn our focus towards North Korea a bit more as well. Some experts have said that the aim to denuclearize North Korea by previous South Korean and U.S. governments is effectively over, as the North Korean nuclear arsenal is no longer a variable in Northeast Asian politics, but it has become more of a constant, especially with the more hawkish stance that the current administration has taken as well from South Korea. They have that we have to take North Korea's nuclear weapons as a given now when considering how to approach issues concerning North Korea. Professor Myers, do you agree?
I would have to agree with that assessment, unfortunately. You know, even when Russia and China were at least pretending to support sanctions on North Korea and were supporting UN resolutions against North Korea, the regime in Pyongyang made quite clear that it was not interested in unilateral denuclearization. So now that China and especially Russia are making clear that they will no longer be enforcing the UN sanctions, Kim Jong-un really has less reason than ever to comply. And in any case, as I've been saying for a long time, it would simply not be domestically viable for Kim Jong-un to back down. He's a military first leader. The military is the one thing that citizens in that country have to be proud of. So a capitulation to the Americans and South Koreans would be destabilizing even for a de facto monarchy, which is what North Korea is. So, yeah, I think the outlook is very bleak indeed.
And Dr. Bennett, what do you think? Is the objective to denuclearize North Korea essentially over? And does that mean that North Korea is viewed as a nuclear power, even if we don't say it officially?
Well, I think what we have to recognize is that Kim Jong-un has been very clear that denuclearization is off the table. He has no intention of going there. And in fact, he is actively building up his nuclear forces. So I think what you're going to see is the U.S. and South Korea still saying, as they do regularly, that denuclearization is an objective, but recognizing that that is a very long-term objective, and that in the short term, they need to be looking more at objectives like trying to freeze some aspects of the North Korean nuclear weapon program. You know, after all, North Korea probably at this stage has maybe 50 to 100 nuclear weapons. And Kim Jong-un has talked about building almost 200 KN-25s with nuclear warheads. He's talked about other missiles with nuclear warheads. His objective appears to be 300 to 500 nuclear weapons, to me at least. That's a world which we don't want. And so as an immediate objective, working on freezing, which probably also won't fully happen, is a more important objective in the short term than any kind of denuclearization, even if we want to keep denuclearization as an eventual outcome. But that's likely 50 to 100 years or more in the future and may never happen. It's just beyond what you're likely going to get Kim to agree for exactly the reasons that Professor Meyer said.
Well, it's been fascinating to get both your thoughts today. We're going to have to leave it there, though. We'll be speaking to Professor Brian Myers from Tongsong University and Dr. Bruce Bennett from the RAND Corporation. Thank you both for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Time once again for Explore Korea, our weekly segment where we discover more of Korea's cultural, historical and travel highlights. And we do that with the help of our special contributors, or explorers, as we like to call them. This week, it is the turn of our travel explorer, Hannah Roberts. Hannah, hello. It's great to see you again.
It's good to see you too.
Okay, so what are we talking about this week?
So today I'm going to talk about traditional markets and what we can see and do there, but particularly what's on offer at this time of year. And since Chuseok is coming up, I think it's it'll be an interesting one.
Yes, I love a good traditional market.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, sounds great. So tell us about Korean traditional markets then. Are there anything that makes them perhaps unique, especially during the season?
Traditional markets in South Korea are known for their quite lively atmosphere and wide variety of fresh, locally sourced products. Because of this, they're full of seasonal offerings, seasonal fruits and vegetables. So they everywhere it's seasonal here, hard to find things out of season, and so the foods and produce are changing all the time, making the markets a different experience every time you visit. It's the perfect place, in my opinion, to immerse yourself in local culture and enjoy seasonal delicacies.
I think that's such a good point about the seasons. It's particularly important here in Korea because we have such extreme seasons. Yes. From the freezing cold winters to the sweltering summers. That makes the items on offer different all year round, as you said. So that does make markets here in Korea quite special, I think. So let's get into them. I believe we are staying in Seoul this week for this. So can you tell us about some of the popular traditional markets in Seoul that our listeners should check out?
Of course, yeah. So a must visit, of course, and one of my favorites actually is Gwangjang Market in Seoul. It's probably the first one that you'll find if you search for markets in Seoul on Google. But it's also one of the oldest and largest markets in Seoul, especially famous for its silk goods, hanbok in particular. That's the traditional Korean clothing,
right?
But most famous with visitors is its mouth-watering street food and sit-down dishes.
Right.
Another great choice in Seoul is Mangwon Market, which is maybe a lesser known traditional market amongst people just visiting the country. But it's highly popular with locals for its great selection of food that has even landed it features on Korean TV shows.
Right. So that's more of a local market.
Yes. Yeah. And another favorite of mine is Tongin Market, which is near Gyeongbokgung, the palace, where visitors can convert modern money into historical money and use those traditional coins to pay the food vendors and actually create like a custom lunchbox meal that you can then take upstairs to a restaurant and eat, which is the perfect thing to do after a few hours walking around the palace.
Yeah, that last place especially sounds fun. You can feel like you're doing a bit of a historical role-playing as well, using that traditional money. Okay, so those are just a few of the markets here in Seoul. Let's talk about food as well. What are some of the seasonal produce and foods that people should be on the lookout for in these markets during this time of year? Because as we said, they do change all year round.
They do, yeah. Coming as a person from Europe, it's very interesting shopping here because you can't find certain things at certain points of the year. So, like you said before, South Korea has a distinct change of seasons. And while it's only around for a short time, autumn is a wonderful time for foodies. You'll find a lot of delicious treats like sweet persimmons, juicy pears, and fragrant chestnuts. Those roasted chestnuts that everyone likes, or not roasted, but they steam them as well. The steamed chestnuts, very popular. As we near the end of September and get closer to the Chuseok holiday, you'll also see lines out of the doors of jeon stores. Jeon are savory pancakes and bite-sized shallow fried foods that are used to set the table for ancestral ritual ceremonies during the traditional holiday.
Right, when people think of Chuseok, they often think of jeon.
Of jeon, exactly. You'll also start to see an abundance of ingredients used for kimchi making. As we pass Chuseok and head into the start of winter, when people typically do kimjang, which is the name given to the act of making kimchi to store for the year ahead. So if you're in Korea now, or if you're coming soon, I wanted to explain this actually, you might see baskets of chili peppers just out on the street, or just out on a tarp, on a roof, or on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And that's people drying the chilies, ready to crush them and turn them into powder to be used for kimchi making later on.
Yes, so watch out for that. So if you do come to Korea at this time of year,
I see them everywhere.
That all sounds very tempting indeed. My stomach is already grumbling at the talk of all this. It's always grumbling at this time in the show whenever we talk about food. But anyway, yes, so those are some of the things to look out for. Now, these are bustling traditional markets, especially if people are visiting for the first time, they can feel a bit overwhelming at times, yes. Right? I understand that you have some tips for us on how to navigate them.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a few little tips. I know some people can get a little bit nervous or intimidated when you're visiting local places especially. Mm. So I've got a few little tips to make your experience at the market more enjoyable.
Okay.
So my first tip, which I don't think is a problem for us right now, is come hungry. The markets are a food lover's paradise. So make sure you have an empty stomach to start sample all the delicious foods on offer. Mm. Second is to bring cash. Some vendors in the markets might have a card machine for you to use, but it's a good idea to have cash on hand for smaller stalls and street vendors. And sometimes it's easier just to pull out a 1001 note and pop that in the basket that's there. Yeah,
it is becoming more common for places to accept card as well, or bank transfers, but that can be difficult for tourists. So yes,
exactly.
It is just best to have cash on hand.
Yes, definitely. And my last little tip is to learn a few Korean phrases. Now, this applies whether you're going to the markets or not when you visit Korea, but I think people are always so surprised how far even the most basic of greetings and thank yous and just kindness words can go in building rapport with locals.
Definitely. That all sounds like excellent advice. And once you do get comfortable, markets are usually great places to buy souvenirs and items to take back home, of course. So for our listeners planning to bring back some South Korean goodies, what are some popular food items or souvenirs they should consider purchasing from the markets?
So whenever I go home, I like to take yakgwa, which are actually quite popular at Chuseok also. Mm. They are honey cookies made with wheat flour, sesame oil, honey, and soaked in a sweet syrup. Children especially love yakgwa, but they also love traditional puffed rice snacks. And you can't go wrong with Korean tea and ginseng products, all of which are very easy to find in every market across Seoul.
Great. I mean, traditional markets, they are, of course, popular attractions wherever you go in the world. Mm-hmm. But Korean ones, I do think, are quite special as well.
Definitely.
There are, I mean, they're just places where you can make some great memories, right?
Definitely. Yeah, you can. I have so many memories from visiting markets across Seoul. My favorite one, though, or one of my favorites, because how can you ask me to choose? You didn't ask me to choose, but I'm going to tell you anyway. One of my favorites is Jidong Market, which is in Suwon, actually. So it's not in Seoul, it's just outside Seoul.
Right, this whole metro area.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, you can get there on the subway. It was particularly impressive. Every few stalls, there is an alleyway, leading off to yet more little restaurants and other shopping stalls. And there were so many different things to see. Mm. My favorite thing when visiting any market is seeing the vast quantity of spices and fresh produce and other cooking ingredients which are displayed in those huge buckets or baskets or bags.
Sure.
For some reason, that's so satisfying to my artist eye. I love it. And my favorite stall at Jidong Market was one. You can find them in all sorts of markets everywhere, but it was one selling puffed grain snacks. They have bags of snacks stacked higher than your head, and they're sold in these huge, like great big Santa sacks, clear sacks that are just full of puffed corn and things like that.
Right.
But I love especially watching the, what are they called? Those like puffed corn discs.
Sure, yes.
Yeah, I love watching those discs being made because they press them down onto the machine, and then it's like a game. You have to guess when the corn is going to pop out. And it shoots out of the machine with this big bang, and then it's caught in a big net, which to me was the most fun thing to see the very first time I ever saw it.
Right.
And I think I can stand at that stall at Jidong Market and watch it forever.
It is very almost therapeutic to watch those snacks being made with their loud bangs. I mean, at first people can be quite startled if you don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. It's just snacks being made.
Just snacks.
Yeah, essentially, yes. So definitely people should check that out. So Jidong Market, a bonus market to add to the list today. Yeah. Before we go, can you quickly tell us about how to get to some of these markets that you mentioned?
So all of the markets can, of course, be driven to, but it might be difficult to find parking. So I'd recommend taking a taxi or public transport if that's possible for you. Gwangjang Market Food Alley is located out of Jongno 5 Ga Station, Exit 8, which is on Subway Line 1. Mangwon Market can be found a short walk from Mangwon Station, Exit 2, which is on Line 6. Tongin Market is just to the west of Gyeongbokgung Palace, and so you can get there a short walk north out of Gyeongbokgung Palace, Gyeongbokgung Station, exit 1, which is on line 5.
Great. We'll leave it there, Hannah. Thank you for those recommendations. It's been a pleasure as always, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you. See you soon.
Truth is, I am Iron Man. Annyeong, Korea. This is Bob Layton, co-creator of Iron Man. You are listening to Korea 24 on KBS World Radio.
Okay, we've come to our daily closing segment now, Morning Edition Preview, where we take a look at some interesting features or reports coming out in tomorrow's newspapers, namely the Korea Times and the Korea Herald. And for that, we have joining us in the studio once again, Ash Potter. Ash, hello, it's great to see you.
Hello, Jang-ho, how are you?
I'm good, thank you for asking. Let's get into our first article. What do you have for us?
First up from the Korea Herald is an article in tomorrow's paper about a curatorship for Korean art in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, better known as the Met, and it's written by Park Yuna.
Yes, the Met. It's a world-famous museum, of course, and it'll certainly boost Korean art's visibility. What can you tell us about this curatorship?
Well, it's excellent because it definitely will be a major boost to Korean art. This was established by Eleanor Suna-hyun. She's been appointed as an associate curator, but she's already worked before in the British Museum, so she started working at the Met in 2019. Park Yuna writes that this fund was established in 2019 with the aim of strengthening the presentation of Korean art in museums.
Yes, before this news, though, did the museum have any relationship with Korean art?
Well, on Wednesday, they held a ceremony to mark this good news, and it actually coincided with the 25th anniversary of the Arts of Korea Gallery, which was founded in 1998. This gallery was designed also by a Korean architect, Woo Kyu-sun, and this highlights Korean art such as ceramics and Buddhist paintings from the Goryeo era. So if you're interested, you can read about that tomorrow.
Okay, great. Let's move on to our next article. What else have you found in tomorrow's newspapers?
So the next article is written by Pyo Kyung-min in the Korea Times, and this is about a virtual K-pop group that captured global attention in January when they released an album.
A virtual K-pop group. Okay,
yes.
Interesting. Tell us more about this group then.
So they're called Maeve or Maeve, and there's four virtual female members called Zena, Siu, Tyra, and Marty. Seems out of place. And they were created by a company called Metaverse Entertainment by An Sung-won. And she said, before to the Korea Times, "Our goal was to stay in the harmonious zone where the visuals are not excessively surreal, but still uphold a standard of perfection."
I see. Actually, virtual idols, they have been launched in K-pop before. It's not a completely new idea. But what makes this group perhaps different to others?
So according to the company who made Maeve, they are more realistic and move more naturally compared to former virtual idol groups that we've seen. But like other virtual idols, they're created with stop motion capture, so a real person dances and then they digitalize that. But what fascinated me was the backstory to this idol group. So they're not real girls, but the company wants them to be accepted as a genuine idol group, and they also gave them a very sci-fi background story.
Right, I see. Interesting. So what's in store for the future of Maeve then?
Basically, the company wants to pioneer what they call virtual human culture and hone in on the group's success. So if you're interested in more about this group, you can read it in tomorrow's Korea Times.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you for those stories, Ash, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me.
And that's where we wrap up our show for today. Thank you for staying with us. We'll be back same time tomorrow. So we hope you can join us again then. I've been your host, Kwon Jang-ho, and thank you as always for listening. Goodbye.
KBS World Radio strives to promptly update our listeners on safety procedures during emergency situations. The following are recommended guidelines to follow in the case of an earthquake. During an earthquake, you're advised to stay indoors. Going outside could be extremely dangerous, as you could be hit by shattering windows or falling signs. While indoors, turn the gas off and go under a table or desk to protect your head. Refrain from using gas or electricity until after it is confirmed to be safe. If you're in an elevator, promptly get off and seek shelter. If you're on the street, cover your head with your hands or bags and stay away from brick walls and gates. If you're driving, stop your car on the right side of the road. Before seeking shelter, close your car windows and leave your keys in the ignition, then get out of your vehicle. Once the ground stops shaking, request help for the injured, while remaining mindful of possible aftershocks. Please check our website at world.kbs.co.kr for up-to-date information and procedures.